Chris Fleming took me aside afterwards and said, Sam Beltrusis, he's the real deal. Things I was picking up on, he would immediately start to address and talk about. I know he knew what was going on here. These spirits are communicating through him, the Borden bloodline. They went to Sam Beltrusis. We're beginning session number one in the front parlor at the site of Andrew Borden's murder. Sam Beltrusis, you're feeling something come through you. What are you feeling, Sam?
From the haunted heartland in Omaha, Nebraska, my name is Brian Corey, and I welcome you one and all to this episode of the Necronomicast. My guest tonight for a late night conversation is author, historian, lecturer, and clairvoyant psychical investigator, Sam Beltrusis. After writing over a dozen paranormal-themed historical books and appearing on multiple television shows, Sam's work on the new shock doc, The Curse of Lizzie Borden, now streaming on Discovery Plus, will be the focus of our conversation. We all know about the history of the Axe murders, but Sam's going to take us on an exclusive deep dive with behind-the-scenes details of their struggle with the evil encountered during the filming of that investigation. The Curse of Lizzie Borden with Sam Beltrusis here on the Necronomicast. And now calling in on our Necronomicast hotline, the Newsmaker hotline, from Somerville, Massachusetts. I'm so excited to have on the program Mr. Sam Beltrusis. Sam, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing really good, man. It's great to have you on the program. When I'm looking for people to have on the show, I'm always fascinated by authors and people that are putting out great video content and filmmakers and directors and historians. And you're kind of like wrapped up in all of those things. So to have you on the program and be able to share your stories with my listeners, what a great treat. And I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I have been spending the whole weekend talking to people who watched the shock doc, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. And we have so much to talk about.
Yeah, lots to talk about. And, you know, I was kind of going through your history and learning about you. I mean, I've got your wonderful book, Ghosts of Salem, right over here, Haunts of the Witch City. And you are a great writer. I really enjoyed this book. And to have you on the program and talk about this Lizzie Borden case that you're personally involved with, too, being, you know, part of the lineage of the family. I can't wait to talk about this great new shock doc documentary about the Curse of Lizzie Borden. But it took, I mean, you have a journey that you took to get to where we're at now. How did you start getting involved with the history and the ghostly side of things?
Well, growing up, I was always like the kid from The Shining. So I identified with little Danny Torrance and was terrified with the spirit encounters that I would have when I was a child. And experience that was really terrifying when I was a kid, I kind of turned it off. I put on what we call paranormal blinders and really focused on shutting that down, that side of me down. And I ended up going to college in Boston. I grew up in Florida, and I was also in Chicago for a while too, with my father. And I had no idea that I was going to end up in Boston. There was a reason why I ended up in Boston. And the twist is in my family lineage and the stuff that I studied for most of my career as a journalist somehow came to fruition. And I was a tour guide in Salem for 10 years. And it turns out that I'm related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials. Yeah. And then there was another twist. My mother, who was doing genealogy on Ancestry.com, uncovered that we're also related to Lizzie Borden, not once, but twice.
Yeah. And that rears its head in this documentary that you guys just produced with Dave Schrader and Chris Fleming. And the local paranormal investigator, her name's Luann Jolly, is that right? Or Jolly?
Jolly. Yeah, Luann Jolly.
Yeah, fascinating show. So there was you had a lot to write about, I mean, or even experience living in Chicago too. I mean, what a great tradition. I mean, there's a great kind of ghostly haunting tradition and with all the history in Massachusetts and back East, but even in Chicago, my goodness. I mean, you were just like surrounded ever since you were a wee lad.
Yeah. So When I was a boy, we were right next to the, and I forget the name of the cemetery. There was a cemetery that the most, like the most haunted cemetery in Chicago, was like right down the street from us. and then I moved to Florida, which is also haunted. It's Pensacola, Florida. And it's one of the oldest cities in the country. It was actually before St. Augustine. It was, it was blown away by a hurricane. And so the original settlement that was there was actually in the 1500s. So it dates back prior to 1620, which is when Plymouth was colonized, or the people came over on the Mayflower, the pilgrims, the people. And they also actually, something that to point out, that they actually stopped in Provincetown, Massachusetts, which I've also written a book on, and know the ghosts very well. So it seems like that my interest goes back to the 1600s and the 1700s, and it makes a lot of sense because that's where my lineage comes from. Like, we go all the way back to the 1600s.
And earlier you were saying that as a child, you know, you learned to have like a kind of a psychic block or psychic blinders, because it's revealed in the show, and I don't mean revealed for the first time in this show, but you're really coming to terms and being a little bit more public about being clairvoyant and having those abilities. When did you start finding out that you were a little bit different and that you saw the world in a different light or experienced things differently?
It was a hard process. I mean, when I was a child, I had that experience. My grandfather was my spirit guide. So my grandfather passed early, and he's actually the tie to, so his name was Charles Hughes. And Hughes was the tie to all the families that we're talking about, like the Bordens, and also to the Putnam family. And so he was, I would say, kind of visionary. And when he passed, I had what I can only describe as a download from him. I got all this information after he passed in the same room that he would sleep in his house. And that's when my life changed. I started having visitations from the spirit realm, including my grandfather, but also other spirits as well. And it's almost like he passed it down to me, the gift. And he never really would identify as a clairvoyant, but I do know that it does run in our family. And I was scared for so long. I actually went many years having experiences. I was working in New York City as a producer, for example, and walking by Washington Square Park, and I felt something grab my leg while I was walking by, and I looked down and there was nobody there. And then I felt it again. I'm like, wait a minute, someone's playing a joke on me. And it turns out was a mass grave for tuberculosis patients. And I had I can count up, like, there were so many times that I would have these experiences, and I'm like, there's something explainable. It's not paranormal. But oddly, I would still, as a journalist, write the Halloween themed ghost story and talk to investigators and talk to people in the paranormal over the years. And it actually came to fruition when I wrote my first book called Ghosts of Boston. And that happened when I wrote my an article on haunted hotspots in Boston, Massachusetts. And I was approached by my publisher who said, you know what, we want you to write a book. And I'm like, I can write articles, but I can't write a book. And that started my journey as a paranormal researcher. And if you read my first book, it was very much, I used the word alleged a lot, like the alleged haunting at the Parker House in Boston. And because I wanted to maintain my credibility as a journalist. I worked for the New York Times. I worked for Newsweek. I worked for pretty well-respected organizations. And the idea that I was going to write about ghosts seemed like it could affect my credibility, but guess what? It did not. And I found that the more and more I would do the research, the more experiences that I would have while doing the research, because I go to these locations and I sometimes spend months at a location to immerse myself into the ghost lore. And I started interviewing the ghosts, and they started to respond to me. And that opened up my third eye and my sensitivity. And I went from someone who had experiences and was terrified to someone who had experiences and became empowered by it and realized that I had a gift to give a voice to those without a voice. And that's been my passion ever since.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I was just going to say that I've had other guests on the show talk about, like, once they start engaging in the weirdness and the strange and the unusual, once they start kind of interacting with it, it almost like acts like as a psychical floodgate opening up, and you kind of start taking in more experiences. What a great thing to give a voice to those that have lost their voice, and to kind of help those on the other side that might need a little bit of help, or, you know, because they're confused, or trying to right a wrong, or, you know, some kind of story that they need to have remembered, or, you know, brought up modern times. And there's people that with a generous spirit, I guess, in yourself, able to kind of make that happen.
Yeah. And the whole idea of like being public with my abilities as a clairvoyant, it was a big deal for me, because when I was asked to be on the show, I was asked to basically give more like a history of the location, which I know very well, because I've written two books on the Borden murders. But I'm like, I'm also clairvoyant. And they're like, wait a minute, you're clairvoyant? And so of course that opened up a floodgate from the production group. I'm like, going in, it was time for me to do what I do when I write my books. Because if you actually read my books now, I go into these locations and I actually communicate with the spirits. And this for me was great, because I had validation from one of the greats in the field, Chris Fleming, who was right behind me when I had the channeling session at the Borden murder house in the shock dock. And he was able to kind of validate what I was experiencing and what I was saying. And that was mind blowing for me to have that validation, especially with someone with such a history with communicating with spirit his whole life, Chris Fleming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's very apparent when you're watching this show that this wasn't, I had to make a joke. I have to make a little joke, because when they found out that you're also clairvoyant, it's like, oh, do we have to give him more money now? are we hiring him out like as a double role now? But no, so you're with Chris Fleming and the great Dave Schrader, just a broadcast legend in the paranormal. He's just done it all. And he's so compelling and professional to listen to. I love listening to Dave Schrader and the different guests on his program that he has on. And Chris Fleming, he's been in these paranormal psychical circles for years and years, and he's got a fantastic reputation. Now on this, you also brought in a local historian, Luann Jolly, onto the program, and she reacted to this house, because we're getting into the talk now about this curse of Lizzie Borden. And I knew about Lizzie Borden, thought I knew the story. Then I started doing a deep dive. Then I watched your show, and I had no idea, you know, like her cousin Eliza, and the whole story of the family, and a tragic story, and you're involved with your being, you know, part of the family. And I mean, this thing just kind of just develops as you watch it. It just gets bigger. The story gets bigger and more expansive, and just far, far fascinating each minute that passes by.
Yeah. So with Luann Jolly, she is a great investigator. She specializes in EVPs, and she actually has had EVPs that have blown me away. And so she came in with that experience as sort of being the EVP queen of New England. And then also you have Dave Schrader, who is to me one of the best in the field when it comes to paranormal investigation, but also he looks at it in a very, he can take something that's very complex, and just what comes out of his mouth is like brilliance. I'm like, how did you process that within 5 seconds? You know, and I'm like, what comes out of his mouth is just so intelligent. And then he's been friends with Chris Fleming for 17 years. And this is the first time that he actually worked on a TV show with him. So it was a big deal for Dave. And I've been on Dave's show, Darkness Radio, multiple times. And what's so funny, it was, he always ended up talking about Lizzie Borden. This goes back like 7 years ago, the first time I was on his show. And it was almost like we were prophetic that we were going to, you know, meet together at the Borden murder house. And you kind of give you some backstory with me. Like I was terrified of that location for a long time. And the reason why is I had dreams over and over again of like a 35 millimeter movie where I saw what looked like my cousin Lizzie Borden holding a hatchet, but behind her was a man. The man was terrifying to me. Looked like he may have been like not a man, but something else. And I saw Andrew Borden sitting on the couch, and I saw like black and white with subtitles, and the subtitle said, "Diablo did it. Diablo did it." And to me, that was the beginning of my being afraid of the house and going in, that something was going to happen to me in the house. And guess what? It kind of did. I did predict it, but we actually were able to work through that with some of the greatest in the field, like Dave Schrader and Chris Fleming.
Yeah. And watching the show, you guys were all emotionally affected by the experience and even like physically. I mean, the whole autonomic writing segment of the show. And dear listeners, when we talk about these shows, we're going to talk a lot about the behind the scenes and things that happened as we record this. It just was released 3 days ago. We're going to talk for like 45 minutes, an hour, and we're not going to even scratch the surface of what this show uncovers. So I don't want people to think, well, we're going to hear it all here. No, we'll but you guys were all physically, psychologically, emotionally affected by this investigation. And it was something else to see. Chris had, he goes outside and he feels like the weight of the spirit world on him. Like he said, it was hard for him to breathe. You were especially affected during a session. Dave Schrader, automatic writing, he had trouble controlling his arm and the spirit moving through him. And then even Luann, I don't know if it was like an altered equilibrium or what, or she was shoved, but I mean, she had a physical reaction. I mean, as you're going into these kind of places and doing this investigation, I mean, are you scared, excited, worried, all three? You must have just a gamut of emotions this entire time.
So to give you an idea, both myself and Chris Fleming had dreams leading up to this investigation. We would wake up at 3. I would wake up 3:15 every night the 2 weeks leading up to this, and it's almost like I was being prepped for this investigation this whole past 2 years, or actually my whole life, to be honest with you. But I investigated the location right before the lockdown, March 13th, 2020, and I had probably the most profound investigation that I've ever had in the house. And I've investigated the house multiple times. And a lot of issues regarding sexual abuse, which I never had picked up before, was coming out through the spirit communication. And to be honest with you, I never really communicated with Eliza until the day of the shoot. And then she came through loud and clear. I came back it's called the Dark Zone. And I investigated the location with Susan Slaughter about a year ago, and also had intense spirit communication. So it was almost like I was being prepped for this investigation and what was about to unfold. And if we talk to all the people involved, this was something completely different. We've been on hundreds of cases before, but this was very personal. Whatever we were combating was attacking us and attacking our families and our people that we loved. And all of us, you don't see that on like off camera. We do know that Chris's mother was sick during this. And I actually, and this was cut from the show, but I actually did pick up that his father, Reggie, came into the room while he was outside with the cameras. And I'm like, Chris's father, Reggie, and I didn't even know his father's name was Reggie, is in the room. And he's saying that there's a loved one that's sick and he needs to check on this and this loved one. So I was able to tell that to Dave, and Dave told Chris. Chris tried to call his mother, and he found that she was ill and that she needed help. So there was a lot going on beyond what you see on camera. My father, who passed 2 years ago, came through in the investigation out in the woods, and it was terrifying out in the woods, But also knowing that my father was there, and my mom was like, what did your dad say? And I'm like, he's like, chill out, son. That's what he said.
Thanks, dad.
Yeah. He was like, cause I felt like I was being used as bait in the middle of things were swirling around us in the woods.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Cause that's a really interesting, I perked up during that whole thing. Cause you're going out into the woods. And for the listeners to kind of find out what's going on. You guys went out to the woods where John Morris's house used to be. And you're kind of doing psychic exploration of that area to see if you can pick up on John and everything. And the camera picks up eyes. There's sounds. You guys felt like the things were moving around you. And that I don't, I'm going to be careful how I ask this, because in paranormal things, in situations, I'm not saying that was Sasquatch or an alien. I'm not. What I'm saying is that sometimes in these psychic or in these paranormal phenomenon, there's shared strange things that are shared between each phenomenon. Like there's something out in the woods circling around you, strange lights, sounds, feelings. You guys felt, you know, your own bodies were the kind of the instruments of measurement. You guys felt things going on. And a lot of those things happen with, you know, cryptid sightings or alien things or wilderness poltergeists and ghosts and stuff like that. So there's kind of like a shared human psychic response to these things. And you guys certainly felt that out in the woods. That was something else when you took the investigation out there.
Yeah. So to give you some idea, we're filming in February, it was freezing. Yeah. We were all in the middle of the woods. And so we go out there and of course on the spirit box, like things were coming through, like Satan and the devil. And it was like horrible, horrible things on the spirit box. And of course I have my dowsing rods and I'm like, you know, where should we go? And I'm like, I point to this direction and Dave was like, Sam, why don't you go out there? And I'm like, Dave, like we just heard Satan. And so of course I go out in the middle of the woods.
Right.
And I felt like I was under attack, being attacked. You know, do I think it was actually related to the Borden case? But I think that we did tap into something that was terrifying and potentially maybe cryptids or something else that is in the area. It was the Freetown State Forest, which is notoriously haunted. And, you know, there were reports of what we call puckwudgies in the area. And there was like one period where I had to go to the restroom and Dave is like, Sam, don't pee on the puckwudgie. And I'm like, okay, Dave.
What's a puckwudgie? What is that?
Okay. So a puckwudgie is an elemental. Okay. It's about 3 to 4 feet. So it's kind of smaller. So it is a cryptid and it is, it's kind of like a troublemaker. So it would run around you and it would cause trouble. Like it would like kick dirt or say things like Satan when it's trying to scare you. People have reported in the Freetown State Forest and also in the area near the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast, which is considered part of the Bridgewater Triangle, on the outskirts of the Bridgewater Triangle. So it's an elemental, and so it's Native American. So if there's land that was Native American, like you're going to find a puckwudgie legend attached to that. So I would say it's like a little monster.
Strange. Yeah. So, you know, so it's not just the curse of Lizzie Borden. There was so much going on like all the time in this hour and a half documentary that you guys put together. And earlier I made a note. I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about this too. The EVPs that were collected, and you said that Luann is a real guru when it comes to electronic voice phenomenon. And what I really thought was remarkable is that in a lot of shows, you don't see this. And this is what I saw on your show. The information that was revealed was forward, and also something was kind of revealed when played backward. And I've done a lot of research on like EVPs. I mean, a lot of times new investigators or people just kind of getting interested in the paranormal take it for granted that where EVPs and the study of it came from. And Frederick Jurgensen, you know, when he was like recording birds, I think it was a Spanish finch he was recording, and he kept hearing what he thought was his mother's voice. And a lot of times these EVPs would be super fast or super slow, or they would talk minutes after he talked, or they would be backwards, or they would be in many different languages. And so the research of EVPs goes back, you know, 60 years or more, going back to those early experiments, and you guys found things forwards and backwards. I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, you don't see that on a lot of modern, quote unquote, ghost hunting paranormal television shows, where the EVPs are really strange phenomenon rather than just perhaps their spirits. I mean,
Brian, I'll be honest with you. What we were dealing with was pure evil. So you're going to encounter. This was not Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know, we were not encountering Casper the Friendly Ghost. There was something else, whether it, you know, you want to call it a dark entity, you want to call it, an ET, which could have been the case, especially since we're around the middle of the woods where there's been multiple reports of, you know, ET sightings. But what she was picking up, I've never seen that before. I've never seen an EVP where you can play it forward and play it backwards, and it says a different thing. Now, having done the investigation, like while I was there, and I kept talking to Dave about this, I felt like that because the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast has been investigated so much, it's been investigated over and over again. You have people from all over the world bringing their paranormal baggage and dropping it off there, that maybe it was a thought form or something was stirred up that does not go back hundreds of years to the family curse. But I think we whatever it was, we tapped into pure evil. And when we were doing what we did in that house, they wanted certain people to be in that house to combat it. So it was almost like a fight between good versus evil.
Yeah, the fight between good versus evil, for sure. When you've got this clairvoyant feeling, these perceptions, are you able to tell something that's an evil human spirit versus something else otherworldly? You know what I mean? Like when you walk into a place and you might feel like a negative, like a bad guy, like a bad person, the spirit of a bad human individual. How does that differ from when you're into a place and you're like you said, this is pure evil? I mean, does it touch your heart? I mean, what do you feel?
There's a different feeling that you get as a clairvoyant. So for most of my, as someone who was sensitive to the spirit realm, I would say I was more high vibration when it comes to my connection. So I would only connect with like higher vibration spirits that wanted to tell their story. As I progressed, there was one situation where it was chronicled in the 100th episode of A Haunting, where I got an attachment that nearly killed me. And it wasn't a demon, but it was a dark man who committed a murder back in 1830. And he attached himself to me and almost like wanted me dead. So after that attachment, I had it removed by a shaman, Shaman Michael Robichaud, and that opened up my third eye, but it also opened up almost like it marked me for the darker entities, for me to be able to communicate and see them on a level that I had never seen them before. So something opened up after that attachment. So once you see evil, it's almost like you have the means to see it again. And yeah, it's a different feeling. It's almost like a weight is on top of you. I do have a natural ability to kind of cut through the darkness and get to the light. So what my role in this investigation was to get around the dark entity who was holding back some of these spirits, including Eliza, who I connected strongly with, and talk to them directly. And that's my gift. Chris is able to combat the darkness and combat the dark entity. I'm not able to do that, but I am able to bait it and also get to what I'm here for, which is to talk to the spirits of the house who wanted desperately to communicate.
Interesting. So do spirits or spirit, I mean, on the other side, do they notice you? Do they recognize you or any other clairvoyants? You know, is there something about where they're at? They're able to see through the veil of other people, of people like you, yourself, that have these abilities. Are you easily identifiable in on the other side?
Yeah, so sometimes when I go into that state, it's almost like I go into another realm of some sort. It's almost like a dark place. So like Insidious, like I hate to make that comparison, but it is kind of like that. I go into this other realm where I can see the spirits and I communicate with them and they can see me sometimes. I've had it where the spirit has says, "You can see me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I can see you." We have this full blown conversation. And it's not, I'm not even talking it. I'm doing it in that other realm. So it really depends, Brian. Sometimes I do see them and they see me back. Eliza saw me. In fact, I think she called me there. She liked something that I did apparently at the other investigations that she, I think in the spirit realm, she called me there. And actually she does say that to Chris. She's like, "I'm sorry for calling you here." And she was talking to me. She's talking to Dave and Luann too, but she was talking about me specifically because I connected with her as soon as I walked into the house, I connected to Eliza.
Wow. That's incredible. Do you find that it's different talking to somebody that's like recently deceased versus somebody that's been dead for over 100 years or decades? Is there a difference in like their energy, or are they able to be more focused if they've been dead longer because they're more used to it? Or I guess time really doesn't really matter to a spirit once they've gone past bodily death. But is there a difference between maybe somebody that's new dead and old dead, for lack of a better word?
Yeah. So there are disembodied souls. A soul would stick around, a spirit would stick around if they had unfinished business, like murdering your children and then taking a straight razor and cutting your neck. Yeah. So she has severe.
Yeah.
She has severe guilt. So she, you know, as you saw when I was communicating with Eliza, she was very, very emotional and very much wanting to protect her children. She also felt like she couldn't come inside the house. And I was like, "Come on, Eliza, you can come into the house." And she was like, "I can't, they won't let me in. They won't let me in." And her children were in the house and she wanted to be with her children. And so with Eliza specifically, she was super emotional. She was grateful that I could see her and communicate with her. I do think that I'm like a psychic time traveler, so I can go back 150 years, 200 years. Wow. And, you know, am I communicating in a different era? Maybe I am. I just find that I have better, I can communicate with people who've been passed for 100 years or 200 years, just as well as I can communicate with someone who has passed recently. I'm almost kind of like, I tend to gravitate towards the ones who have been around much longer and sticking around because of unfinished business.
Wow, that's fascinating. And when we talk about Eliza, we're talking about Eliza Borden, and years before the Lizzie Borden murders, Eliza murdered her children, two of them. Drowned them.
Yeah.
And that's a focal point of this documentary, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. I mean, it's like a curse of the Borden family. And so, yeah, Eliza reaches out to you. You emote her emotions, I guess. Please correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but it seems like that you're able to tap into her emotions and reveal her grief, her guilt, her sorrow over what she had done. But it might not have been a case of just temporary insanity or matricide or anything like that. There's revelations that come out in the show about, you know, the dark forces at work that might have, you know, pushed her hand into this situation. So it's incredible. It's gripping television, and knowing that it's happening to you. It's not something that you guys are reading a script and going over. I mean, this is happening in real time as you're walking through the house and you're overcome with these things.
Yeah, I want to thank the producers for allowing us to do that, because I think that the original idea that this was going to be a Lizzie Borden documentary or shock doc, and we were like, well, right now Eliza's coming through and letting us do that and letting us communicate with the other spirits and having the spirits guide the narrative of the show. And that's what's so different about this documentary. I've heard multiple people say it's the best show that they've seen on Discovery Plus, because it's so different. It's not like the other shows that I've seen on Discovery Plus. And there's something special about it. And it's because the spirits were the driving force with telling their story. And the fact that they allowed her to do that. And yeah, it was her pain and not my pain. I don't 100% remember what happened in that seat the first time I connected with Eliza. The way that the actors played, I sobbed when I saw that scene, not because of me, because of her. And seeing what I saw and seeing it told beautifully with her voice on top of my voice is exactly how I saw it and experienced it. And that moment to me is like the most breathtaking 5 minutes of television that I've ever participated in. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And what's remarkable is that this is family. You're not just walking in off the street, just some regular old paranormal investigator just going in into a cold location. I mean, this is your bloodline. I mean, this is your family. And for you to be reached out to in such a personal way. You know, I'm always thinking about these paranormal experiences being very, personal, a lot of times. And they're a lot of these experiences are meant for the person that's experiencing them. Like it's almost tailor-made for them sometimes. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's some kind of psychical connection or things like that, but it must've been incredible for you to feel, you know, a voice from beyond and to kind of slip into that and to relive all this with cameras rolling. You must have been very satisfied that they took great care, not only with the seriousness of the subject matter, but also because of your lineage to and connection to the family.
Yeah. So when I was connecting to Lizbeth or Lizzie and connecting to Eliza, and there are other family members that I have connected with in the past, but I was fighting for my family. Like that was what I was doing. I was fighting for my sisters. I was fighting for all the other people that are connected to this family as well. And all the pain and all the heartache I was fighting for them. And I felt like they were fighting for us too. And that's the finale was, I watched it over and over again because I see, and they did a wonderful job of taking all the family members and standing, you know, kind of having it up on the screen. But that's what it was like. They were standing behind me to fight against this darkness. And it was super emotional. And of course, I was super emotional throughout the show.
Yeah.
But it was like, imagine you go your whole life and you're on this journey and you realize finally, this is what my life is about. This is my purpose. And so I was there in the moment with people that I respect with all my heart, fighting for my family.
Amazing. Now I'm not clairvoyant. Everybody's got a little bit somehow psychical ability just because we're connected in humans somehow. But I go into a place even like the Villisca Axmer House, not too far from where this show is recorded. I've been there quite a few times, spent the night there a couple few times, and a lot of other Midwest paranormal hotspots. But like in Villisca, you walk in there and you feel the heaviness of the place. And I don't know if it's just because of the historical context that you're walking there and you know what's happened in that place. It's not rumored to have happened. It's not a local legend or folklore or something like that. You know, 8 people were murdered with an axe in that place. And you feel the heaviness, or you think about the sorrow. So I don't know if it's just me kind of collecting my thoughts and thinking about the slaughtered people in that place. But for somebody that's clairvoyant, truly, when you walk into a place, maybe you don't even know what happened there. Do you walk into a place and you're like, ooh, you know, like I feel something. And then, you know, and you take it from there.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, like the way that my gift works, if you watch like the Conjuring films with Lorraine Warren, the way Lorraine Warren is able to see, and she kind of flashes back in time. When I saw that in the movie, I cried because that's exactly how I experienced it as well. So what would happen is I would go into like a light trance and I would kind of like flash back in time and I would see things unfold. So for example, at Villisca, I probably like possibly would see a replay of their murders or maybe not, you know, like it really depends on the situation and if they want to reveal themselves to me. But when I tune in, I can tune in to, you know, 100 years ago without even knowing I'm doing it. And the spirits, they know that I have that ability. So they reach out to me. Whoever reaches out to me, I have to make myself open to do that. But at Villisca, I'm sure I would probably communicate with the ones that were the victims and not the perpetrators.
Sure. My goodness. Yeah. Like we said earlier, like giving a voice to those that have lost their voice. And that's an important thing. And that's what I like about the humanitarian, which is a weird word to use about the spirit world, but like the humanitarian thoughtful approach to these paranormal investigations, because, you know, we are talking about people that were killed. We are talking about people that, you know, died and horrible sorrow and heartache over generations. And for you to pick up on that, that's incredible. Yeah. Lizzie Borden. Do you feel like she is the one that committed the murders?
All right. So, you know, I think that coming into the documentary that we were wanting to do sort of like people were expecting a whodunit, and it's not a whodunit. And at the end of the show, it doesn't really matter. But what does matter is, you know, I do think that, and as I said in the show, I do think that Lizzie Borden may have been physically done it, but she was not mentally responsible, and she doesn't take ownership in the afterlife for the murders. And, you know, so not to give the whole plot away, but I have always thought that Lizzie Borden, you know, actually did commit the murders, but as the dream tells me that I have over and over again, she didn't do it. Diablo did it. Mm.
Yeah. Now, Sam, like, I got a little gray in my beard here, and I know you're not in your 20s, but going back and thinking, as you've gone and gained experience and been on these investigations and things like that, what are some things like a younger people that are just getting into the paranormal, or maybe just kind of figuring out that they have these abilities? What are some things that you wish that you knew then that you know now? I mean, do you think you should avoid things like unnecessary encounters with the Ouija boards or anything like that? Are there things that you're like, whew, I dodged a bullet when I used to do that? Or
yeah, so I have it runs in my family. So my little niece Aubrey, who's 4 years old, she's also clairvoyant, and she's like, Uncle Sam. She had a book of mine, and it was Ghostwriters. And there's a picture of me walking up with a lantern, and she's like, "You saw a bloody hand on the wall, and you were terrified." I'm like, "How do you know that?" she knew that intuitively. She communicates with my stepdad Paul, who passed. She communicates with him. She's like, "Pop Pop's in heaven, and he said this and he said that." I'm like, "Well, tell Pop Pop we love him, you know." Yeah. So I, as a child, I didn't really poke the bear. I didn't play with a spirit board. I didn't try to reach. I was terrified. I wasn't gonna, like, you know, ghosts don't, I don't hunt ghosts. Ghosts hunt me. And they've done that my whole life.
Wow.
And so I'm not gonna try to actively hunt them, which is the opposite of everybody else in my life right now. But I think what advice I would give my niece is trust your instincts. And to, you know, and to, like, be empathetic to the spirits, because they were people too. And I think that one of the biggest issues that I've seen with other investigators is provocation and the lack of respect for the spirit realm. When it comes to my approach to the paranormal, giving advice to the younger generation, I don't provoke. I have never provoked it throughout my whole career. I've been very empathetic to the spirit realm. And because of that, I give a voice to women and children and people of color, the people that are marginalized by the status quo. I gave tours in Salem, Massachusetts. And I, even though I'm connected to the bad guy, the Putnam family, I connect strongly with the victims of the Salem witch trials because I care. I care about these people that have passed 300 years ago. And so if I give advice to the younger generation, it's to, you know, actually, like, be empathetic to them and not to prejudge them like you wouldn't prejudge a person. And then we have this caricature of Lizzie Borden as this hatchet wielding crazy 32-year-old woman who killed her family. And she was so much more than that. She was a complex woman who was very giving to the community. She was taunted and made fun of, and made, there was a rhyme, Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her father 40 whacks, you know, and they would say that and mock her in her home. Mm-hmm. And she still persevered, and she still was a person, and she still gave to the community. She actually founded what was not the Animal Society, but a sort of a precursor to that, and donated her money to that because she loved animals.
Sure. And like, I appreciate the fact that you're saying that it, you know, having that empathy for those that have passed before us, and treating them with respect and not doing the provocation thing. I mean, I think for a while, especially with certain shows, it seems like some provocation worked only insofar as maybe making some kind of evidence or some kind of, there might be some kind of tangible thing, but at what cost? You know, these people have suffered a lot, much. They suffered in life. A lot of people, you know, when we're thinking about heaven and hell, I think a lot of people go through their hell right here on earth for whatever reason. It's a fascinating show, man. And it, like you said, it's not just a whodunit. It's not a whodunit, but you guys explored so many interesting aspects to the case. It's so interesting. And part of my attraction to the paranormal, it's not out of a love for horror movies insofar as, you know, scariness and jump scares and things like that, but it's also like history. I mean, when you read about these alleged haunted locations to use your journalism tour, but you're really doing deep dives into practices of the era, the history of the era, and things like that. And that is what is also just so infinitely exciting or interesting to me when we're talking about paranormal things. And you've got other books out. You have a book on mass murders. I'm going to hear a little bit about that. And also, I'm very excited. I was looking and I'm like, oh my gosh, I love the American Revolution. And you've got a book about the ghosts of the American Revolution. And I was like, oh, I'm going to order that. And it's not out yet, but it's coming out very soon. Can you tell a little bit about some of your other works that you've written about?
Sure. I've written 13 books altogether. You have my bestseller, which is Ghosts of Salem, Haunts of the Witch City. And I also have books. So the books like that I've done in the past, say 4 to 5 years, I have incorporated my clairvoyance into the stories, which I didn't do when I first started writing books about the paranormal. So, you know, on my journeys throughout the country and the ghosts of the American Revolution, I'm going to these locations and I'm flashing back in time and, you know, potentially having conversations with Benjamin Franklin, not to give too much away, or people that have been marginalized throughout history, like Mary Washington, Mary Ball Washington, who was George Washington's mother, who to me is one of those forgotten people from our history, that because she was a woman, she shaped the first president of our country. So I'm big about giving a voice to the loyalists, the other side. And I've had an ongoing experience at the Concord's Colonial Inn in Concord, Massachusetts, where the first shot heard around the world for the American Revolution took place. What I believe is a British soldier. So I'm big about giving that voice to the ones that normally didn't have a platform to communicate to clairvoyants like myself.
History is ongoing. It's always evolving. And like your story is evolving as you exercise and kind of express your abilities through your clairvoyance. It's exciting to see. I mean, it's interesting for somebody that doesn't have those abilities to pick up a book and read, and for me to open up my mind and kind of grasp concepts. It's really interesting, man. I really think that you're a fascinating individual, and I'm really enjoying this conversation. When can we see this Ghosts of the American Revolution book out?
So Ghosts of the American Revolution is coming out November 1st, and it's a labor of love because I actually wrote it right before the lockdown. So the weekend that I investigated was March 13th, 2020, is when I finished. I investigated the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast and finished the manuscript. And then because of the lockdown, it took me 18 months to get this finally published. But it's been worth the wait. It's my favorite book by far when it comes to like doing what I do as a clairvoyant and also as a historian and using my conversations with the dead and also people out in the field who've experienced the paranormal as well. So I, you know, not only do I interview the ghosts, but I also interview people who work at these locations and had encounters with these famous ghosts that I talked to, and not so famous ghosts in the American Revolution. And also too, for, you know, the documentary, The Curse of Lizzie Borden, I will tell you that the research that we just kind of skimmed the surface, but when you dig deeper into my lineage and other people that we're related to, it will blow your mind. We were just able to skim the surface with the people that we're related to, including Sarah Maria Cornell, who hasn't been connected to my lineage or Lizzie Borden's lineage until this documentary. Eliza Borden, we did know about Eliza, but we didn't give her a full picture. And I felt like we did that in this documentary. And there are many more that will blow your mind. Hopefully maybe more shock docs in the future, or maybe a book talking about the connections.
Yeah. I would love it if you continued like these, investigations or follow-ups or an epilogue to the story as you start gathering more information and as life progresses for you and you turn over a new page on things and you find that another piece of another document that you can research and that brings more to life. That's super exciting. Now, I thought you had great camaraderie with Dave that you've known for a while and Chris and Luann. Did you guys ever talk about maybe like, hey, we should get the band back together? We should, because you guys worked well together, you know? And I know it was very personal for you, and maybe that was a lot of the spark of the excitement and the energy of the investigation. But do you guys, worked well together? I think it'd be good to see you guys like, do another kind of show or another investigation.
Yeah, I will say that because of the trauma associated with this case, we're very close. Mm. And so we went to hell and back as a group, and we stuck together and we had each other's backs throughout the whole thing. And I don't trust many people in the paranormal, but when I went under, Dave Schrader was guiding me through that. And it was scary. I mean, I full blown channeled on television. And Dave guided me throughout the whole process. And I thought it was kind of ironic that the man from the lead from the Holzer Files was doing the Holzer method with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a great show.
Yeah. And I love the Holzer Files. And also too, like Chris and I connected on a very, very deep level when it comes to we were telepathically communicating to each other during the seance at the end. And we thought we had full blown conversations that we didn't have on this plane. It was on another plane.
Yeah. And again, with the seance, you know, like so many shows, the bread and butter of all these shows and just investigations that aren't filmed is EVP sessions and Estes methods. And we see things with technology and different gadgets and things like that. But for you guys to go old school, yeah, and hold hands in the circle and do the seance, it's kind of a lost art. And to see people wisely practice it safely, I guess for me, it looked like you guys were doing it safely. I don't know how safe it felt for you guys, but that I appreciated that too, to kind of use these tried true methods of classic investigative techniques and using the seance was I enjoyed seeing that as well. Sam, having you on the program, man, what a wealth of information. And I really appreciate all this time that you've spent. If people want to get in touch with you or absorb more of your information and material and do deep dives on your books and your readings and your research and everything, I know you've got your website, sambaltrusis.com, and your things are available. Do you have an online store or do people go to Amazon? What do you prefer or where's all your stuff at?
Yeah, so definitely go to sambaltrusis.com. It pretty much has everything that's available. I definitely prefer if you guys can go to the local bookstore, but if they don't have my books at your bookstore, definitely go to amazon.com and you can have access to all 13 of my books.
Fantastic. And all that information, the link to Sam's website will be on our show page. And what an opportunity for me to gain insight, not only on a great writer, a great investigator, a great historian, but also somebody that has these gifts, this gift of clairvoyance that, like I said, I don't have those gifts. I don't have those abilities. And for you to be so generous with your time and share what it's like to go through life like that, to share that with me and my listeners, man, what a great treat. And I'm so happy that you took the time to speak with me this evening.
Thank you so much, Brian. And before I go, I want to say, like, if you guys do see what we do on the Curse of Lizzie Borden, don't do that at home. It's very dangerous. And you have to have years and years of experience to be able to do what we did. But I will say that it was very effective and we got the results that we were looking for.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with my subscription to Discovery Plus. I mean, I've been to a ton of haunted locations around here and everything, but things like the true cleansing of places and the healing of souls, I'll leave that to the experts like you.
What good advice to yourself.
Very good. All right, Sam, thank you so much for your time, and I'm really excited that you are part of the Necronomicast.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me on.
There we are, everybody. Episode 209 with Sam Baltrusis. What a great guy. I really enjoyed that conversation immensely. His book, Ghosts of Salem, I really enjoyed that. That Shock Doc documentary is incredible. I really something else. And Dave Schrader getting thrown around. Who doesn't like that? Ha ha. Next up on the Necronomicast, it's October. And for October, the next two episodes... I'm not going to give it away. A little paranormal, of course. A lot of paranormal. Authors, documentary, filmmakers, all kinds of stuff in those two episodes. And then there's going to be a special Halloween episode of the Necronomicast with a special guest. Not going to give it away yet. But it's my little treat to you. Three episodes next month. Got a nice little surprise from Paranormality Magazine. Every month they have a top 25 podcast list that's put together based on votes from readers. And the Necronomicast ended up last month at number 13. Never been on the list before, but jumped right up on there at lucky 13. Very cool. So you can go to paranormalitymag.com and vote for... Well, you can vote for whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. Necronomicast. Thanks for listening, everybody. This episode, copyright 2021. All rights reserved. Recorded in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska.